The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus said to the chief priests and elders of the people, "Listen to another parable. There was a property owner who planted a vineyard, put a hedge around it, dug out a vat, and erected a tower. Then he leased it out to tenant farmers and went on a journey. When vintage time arrived, he dispatched his servants to the tenants to obtain his share of the grapes. The tenants responded by seizing the servants. They beat one, killed another, stoned a third, and the second time he dispatched even more servants than before. But they treated them in the same way. Finally, he sent his son to them, thinking, 'They will respect my son.' And when they saw the son, the tenants said to one another, 'Here is the one who will inherit everything. Let us kill him, and then we shall have the inheritance.' With that, they seized him, dragged him outside of the vineyard, and killed him. What do you suppose the owner of the vineyard will do with those tenants when he comes?" And they replied, "He will bring that wicked crowd to a bad end and lease his vineyard out to others who will see to it that he has grapes at vintage time." Jesus said to them, "Did you never read in the scriptures, 'The stone rejected by the builders has become the cornerstone. It was the Lord who did this, and we find it marvelous to behold.' For this reason, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people that will yield a rich harvest." The Gospel of the Lord. So what happened? Did they move you out of your place? I'm sorry. Or no, you brought reinforcements. That's what happened, I see. When you brought your baby up, you should have seen Renee's face behind you. Man, she was just celebrating. Man, she had, and she said something to Sydney.
Oh, Mama.
Yeah. What a grace. Maybe that's why you were seated there, huh? It's called providential. Nice gospel? Make a believer out of me. Not a nice gospel. A very challenging gospel, right? Very challenging. Directed to whom? Israelites? More specific, because Jesus intentionally directed some of the parables specifically to very definitive groups. He is on a path directing it to the religious leadership. He told another parable to the priests and the elders, those who had a measure of responsibility for the proclamation of the kingdom. Who is that? Oh, Pharisees, yes, leaders, elders, priests, the church in the modern world, which is us, right? It is, every single one of us. We like to let that slide by, you know, as if it were somebody else's responsibility. No, it's not. It's ours. The first reading, very much like it. The story of the vineyard, hey, the vineyard didn't yield the fruits. The vineyard is very clear. We sang it in the psalm. The vineyard of the Lord is the house of Israel. That's what it was from the outset, the journey. And over again through the Old Testament, there are stories told about the vineyard. People working in the vineyard, people being faithful in the vineyard, people not being faithful in the vineyard, people using the vineyard for their own purposes and not for the purpose of extending or building the kingdom. So it's not surprising that Jesus moved into this. And we see this parable once again in the light of all of the ones that we've talked about. Remember the ones we've talked about for the past 4 weeks now? 5 weeks? Remember the first one, looking at the person, hey, telling the truth. Get serious about truth in my life. Don't be telling other people, putting on a pity party and gossiping and chatting about what other people did to me and, you know, be pitiful. Grow up. He said, if you have an issue with somebody, speak to them face to face. Hey, deal with it and try to work it through. If it doesn't work, hey, bring some other people into the process and engage them so as to challenge the person. But keep looking for the truth. And then Peter, in his great burst of excitement, Lord, how many times do I have to forgive? 7 times? You think that'll do it? And Jesus said, not a hope, you know, not a hope that I would do. It's not a numbers game. It's an attitude and disposition. Put it on. Forgiveness is an attitude. It's not how many times I've forgiven a person. But when I forgive, I have a reasonable expectation of a change in behavior. Because that is what forgiveness is about. If I don't change the behavior, then how in the heck could I be receiving forgiveness? I'm not. Because I'm not disposed and I'm not integrating the reality. And then we had the laborers. Now, he kept pushing it a little bit, saying, folks, why don't you pay attention to what I'm saying? And he said, let me tell you this one about a man who had a vineyard. And he invited all of these people. He went out. He saw people doing nothing. It was like going to the market square and seeing people there who were looking for work. And he picked them up in his truck and brought them to the vineyard. Said, you'll go and work a day in my vineyard. 9 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And he gave them all the same wage. He said to his foreman, now pay those who have been working all day. And begin with these folks over here who came in the last period. Man, they were fine. But the folks who came in and they were saying, hey, we expected more. Why? Because we've been laboring all the time. Man, we've been doing this. Wow, that's a real kicker. We've got a lot of that in the world. Hey, I've been working my way to the kingdom since I was 4 or 5 or 7 or whatever, you know. Well, it's a little disappointing because I'm really not working my way to the kingdom. He's working our way for us. There's only one way. I can't work my own way into the kingdom. That's the kicker in that parable. There's only one reward, and it doesn't come through me. It comes through him. That's what this is about. Salvation comes to us through Christ Jesus alone. That's it. Not through all of the works. Not that the works are unimportant, but they are not the centerpiece. My faith in him and my relationship with him, that's the centerpiece. That's what it's about. And knowing that and proclaiming and celebrating that reality is important. So then he talks to them, having dealt with that parable, saying, hey, it's about trusting me and that, hey, I'm the one who brings about salvation, not your stuff or your things. Let me bring it about for you. Let's have this relationship where I can bring it to you. And then he told us the parable about the two sons. Man, they understood that one. That kind of disturbed them. And so they're beginning to get ready to do the most original thing in the whole world. When it becomes too much, let's take him out. And they start their efforts to try and take him out. Why? Because the challenge is too great. And when the challenge is too great, we start devising ways. How can we get rid of the threat? Well, in reality, he wasn't a threat at all. It was just a perceived thing. There was nothing to be afraid of in him. Show me one person in the gospel experience of Jesus Christ living in our world where he took anybody out. Just one. Show me one. It doesn't exist. There was not a single person that he took out. That's our stuff. And then he comes to the parable today, but notice the preparation. The details the details. The devil is in the details. The details are really something. This man, he had a vineyard. He went about preparing it very, very well and very deliberately. He put a hedge around it. He put a vat in there. He put a tower so that people could see any threat and that they could be secure in the vineyard. And then he leased it out. He leased it out to these people. And he didn't ask them for a great deal, really. He just wanted fruit. Fruits. That's all he asked for. Fruits. And so, naturally enough, when harvest time came, he sent his servants to get his share of the fruits from the vineyard. And what happened? They started attacking them. Why? They said, hey, we've got control of this. You're not getting any of this. This is for us. And there was no experience of sharing. They beat some of them up because they said, hey, that was not the plan. That was not what he asked of you. They looked them face to face and they said, no. That's not why he gave you this vineyard. And so they killed some of them and they got rid of the others. And then he said, you know what? Maybe they will respect my son. It's a very reasonable thought. When you are the owner of something and you send one of your family members, kinfolk, to the people, there generally is a little respect for that reality. And he said to the priests and the elders, maybe in sending his son, they might respect my son. But they see him coming and they say, hey, let's get rid of him now. And then we'll really have what we want anyway, that we will have control and we will have the ownership and the rights to this. Wow, they did not. It didn't miss its target at all with the priests and the leadership. This was precisely why he died on the cross. One of the significant reasons, because he made it very clear to them, folks, this has been entrusted to you. You are stewards of this. You don't own it. You don't control it. You don't keep other people from receiving it. Not working. And just showing up, not sufficient. Sorry. Not sufficient. So it was a great parable. Man, he really got through to them. But it infuriated them. And interestingly enough, throughout these 2,000 years, it continues to infuriate a lot of people. Why? Because we don't want to be generous and we don't want to be like him. We'd rather fight our own battles in so many instances. And maybe because we haven't really taught each other very well. So let's look at the parable now in our lifetime and put that parable down, lay it down in a global experience, and this is what it looks like. South Africa. One of the great countries in our world, rich in so many ways. Rich in agriculture, rich in terms of a wonderful culture, rich in terms of climate, opportunity, rich in terms of minerals, gold, diamonds, abundance, plenty for everyone, but it never happened. Because a small white minority wanted to control it for themselves. We call it apartheid. When I was growing up and I would say at home, what is apartheid? It's a disease, a sickness that affects so many parts of the world. and it hasn't still received a cure or a healing. I remember watching on television back in the 60s, and the Springboks came to play in Ireland, and all of the protesters out there saying, "We are against apartheid." Are we really? A lot of leaders came along during that time in South Africa. A lot of hopeful leaders. And they attempted to change the system. But they were crushed. They were usually taken out because they were a threat to a small little minority government system. And the government crushed the challenge. And then Nelson Mandela came along. And some of his friends had even said to him, when he was a young lawyer in Johannesburg and he looked out the window of his office there and he fell for his people, and he said to his friend, "We got to do something." And his friend said, "Hey, you can't fight City Hall." Thank God he didn't believe that. And so he continued to push through, and the same group, they tried to quash him and conquer him, and eventually they imprisoned him. It's a great story. For 27 years, he was in Robben Island. And one would expect, reasonably, that he would really have hate and revenge on his mind. But he didn't. That's just pure providence. No other way one could understand or appreciate that reality. And eventually, as some other people began to come to their senses a little bit, he was released and he came out of Robben Island, and he sought the people, the very people who had put him in there. He sought them out and wanted to build relationships with them and said, "No, it's not about me. It's about our people. It's about our country." And without animosity or hatred or revenge, he sought them out and said, "We've got to be about the business of rebuilding this country." And one of the great dreams he had, you know, was through sport, because everybody was engaged in sport, and particularly the Springboks, they had been such the rugby team, and bring the World Cup rugby, and everybody around the world supported to bring the World Cup to their country so that it might mend some relationships. Very interesting experience. What are the things that we really have in common? Now what divides us? We give an overabundance of energy and time to things that keep us separated and not sufficient to what really draws us into Christ Jesus. And he became president of that country now at a very troubled and fractured time. But given the opportunity to bring it together, was the gospel story of our time. The stone rejected by the builders becoming the cornerstone. How many times do we have to remember it? It's our story and our history. What difference does it make in my life? What difference does it make to us in the Catholic Church, you know? There's something wrong. There's a major disconnect. 70-something percent of our people don't come to church on a regular basis. When I was growing up, the biggest worry was, how do we get these folks out so that we get the next group into the parking lot, because we have only so much parking space, you know? That's what we communicated. We failed to communicate a lot of other things. That it's really about him and what he desires to do in us. It's not about what I'm doing, and it's not about me making my way to the kingdom. He has provided all of that for us. All I got to do is say yes to it and open the door. That's what we're talking about in the bulletin this week and last week. Hey, open the door for God's sake. Do something. Be open to something to change. That's what the parable in the vineyard was about. There were plenty of people showing up, but they were showing no fruits. because they didn't anticipate fruits or they didn't expect. That's one of our tragedies in the Catholic Church. We don't expect much and we don't get much. We always have somebody else to blame. Hey, it's Father or it's this or it's the institution. No, it's not. It's me. It is me. Let's be honest. It's me. And my showing up in church is not going to get it done. Showing up and hoping from week to week that there'll be a change in my life or my experience, there won't. There won't. Unless I make a decision that I'm going to really change some things in my life. Because I am in a growing relationship with Him, and I cannot continue to believe that I am seeking fruits by just showing up. True. It's a great parable. But it involves the other pieces about being honest with people, not gossiping and not talking about and putting on a pity party for myself when somebody hurts me, but rather being directive and speaking directly to them. And being forgiving and being reconciling and realizing, hey, there's only one wage. And He is the distributor of that. And then He invites us to bear fruit in His vineyard, but it ain't going to happen. And we're not going to be able to raise up another generation on where we are at and what we are doing. We bemoan the fact that we have generations of children who do not come to the Catholic Church any longer. Guess why? Guess why? We don't have to do much guessing. When we look like, and when we act like, and when we celebrate like, we are the brothers and sisters in the vineyard and cut out the peripheral stuff, then the grace will come. Then we'll experience what He wants us to experience. And we'll realize, most of all, it's not about me. It's about what He desires to do in me. And how do I provide Him that opportunity? It's worth noting in the vineyard, you know, He set it up beautifully. The attention, great attention to detail. And then handed it over, and all He wanted was fruit. Why can we not give Him fruits? And each one of us has got to answer for ourselves. And then when the fruits didn't show up, He said, perhaps they will respect my son. What kind of respect do we show? Hey, when we're half in and we're half out, we come sometimes, then we don't bother coming other times because we're not attached to the community of Christ. The difference between us and many other Christian denominations is He has called us as community, not as individuals. It's not just about my personal relationship with Jesus Christ. It's about my relationship with Him and being Eucharistic people. That's the difference. And how do we bring that Eucharist to life? Well, let's look around. By singing, by responding, by praising, by being engaged in Him. By trusting what He says and what He invites us to do and what He invites us to be. How interesting the little nuance in the parable. They saw the sun coming. They wait for Him to come into the vineyard, and then they say, we have to drag Him outside, and then we kill Him. Wow. What do you see in them? The name for it is scapegoat. We couldn't do it honestly and in broad daylight, so we drag Him outside and we pretend like. That's what scapegoating is. There's always somebody else to blame. Well, in reality, there isn't, because He became the ultimate scapegoat. We've got to deal with that reality in our lives. They dragged Him outside of the vineyard and killed Him because they couldn't do it in broad daylight. that scapegoating, pretty dangerous stuff. There's nobody to blame because he doesn't ask all of these other people, my grandparents or grandmother or fathers or relatives or friends. He asks each of us individually, do you love me? How would people in this assembly know that? It's great teaching. And we see in the next two parables coming up, great. He pushes it again and again. What do you need to change so that you can have some of this?